potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, The Little Things, Supernova, Palmer, and Caged. I'm also going to be talking about some news and the trailer park, as well as the home cinema roundup featuring Snowpiercer Season 1 and Doom Patrol Season 2. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
I want to talk about the Critics' Choice Awards, which has been moved back. Like a lot of the other ceremonies, they shifted a little bit due to the coronavirus in 2020, and it's the 26th annual one, and it will air on March 7th on the CW at 7 p.m. Eastern Time with host Taye Diggs. Some of the presenters are going to be on stage because, of course, we're going to be dealing with the pandemic still. But some of the nominees are going to be appearing virtually at their homes. So it's going to be a little bit of a different Critics' Choice Awards if you've been watching those in the past. But just an idea to keep your eyes open for that. It's going to be in about a month on March 7th on the CW at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. So you want to tune in. I'm a voting member of that organization. So hopefully you'll see some influence from me and my awesomeness out there as well. The next piece of news I want to talk about, can you say humorous? I don't know if it's humorous or more ironic. And that is the whole thing that happened with stocks and GameStop and Reddit this week. Now, here's the thing. I am not a hedge fund manager. I do not understand the stock market super well. I am not heavily invested in the stock market. And I also don't use Reddit. So this whole thing happened outside of what I was watching. And it's one of those stories that kind of blew up. But to really understand it, you kind of have to have an understanding of the stock market. And it's making a lot of people on both sides upset. You know, there's some people that are very upset it happened because it disrupted normal trading. But then there's other people that are happy it disrupted that normal trading is because it puts a spotlight on the kind of trading that was being done, which is selling things short. I'm not an investor, so I can't give you a full discussion of what selling short means, but it essentially means you're basically predicting a business to fail. You're predicting the stock to go down, and you're taking advantage of it in such a way that you profit from that. And as I understand it, these people on Reddit use the platform to basically build up stock that was being shorted by hedge funds, and to the point that some of these hedge funds went out of business. Which, here's my just my personal take of it, because like I said, I don't have a horse in this game. I look at it saying, if a system has a vulnerability like that, maybe there's something wrong with the system. You know, maybe the idea of selling short isn't a great thing. I you know, people talk about the American dream and about how you should build things. And that's what we do in this country. We build things. So making a lot of money off of things getting destroyed, that I think is questionable. But, you know, like I said, I don't work in that business, but I can offer you a couple movies that you can watch to get your head around this. And obviously the one that a lot of people have referred to is The Wolf of Wall Street, which explains how the stock market works and how people, especially people either with a lot of money or access to a lot of money, can affect and manipulate the system. Another one to watch would be The Big Short, which is more about the financial crisis that happened over 10 years ago. But the reason The Big Short's important is because it's about these people who essentially bet against the U.S. economy and became very wealthy because of it. But it's a great movie that explains how shorting works and how the stock market works and a lot of the intricacies to it. Because instead of like The Wolf of Wall Street, where you've got Leonardo DiCaprio discussing it with Matthew McConaughey, in The Big Short, you have Margot Robbie sitting in a bathtub explaining it to you, which is much more engaging for somebody like me. There's also another one to watch would be Trading Places. 30-some years ago, 40 years ago almost, Trading Places came out, and it's about an insider and an outsider in the stock market who use the manipulation tools to bankrupt their competitors in this. And while what they do is illegal, ultimately, there are a lot of questions about the stock market that, you know, are things legal? Now, there's two other movies that I think are interesting to talk about in relation to this whole GameStop fiasco. One of them is Capitalism, A Love Story. And I know it's a Michael Moore movie, and a lot of it's got problems. The movie itself isn't a great movie, but it has a nice section that talks about how there is a real world trading and investment system for negative things to happen. In particular, in Capitalism, A Love Story, they talk about how this company took out basically life insurance policies on their own employees and made the employers the beneficiaries. So if these people died, they got the money, and the morally questionable practice of that. And that happens under the radar of a lot of people, but that was an interesting look into some of the ways people find what I would consider maybe not illegal, but sleazy ways of making money. Now, on the same note, there's another movie that you might want to watch, and that one's Pretty Woman, all the way back to 1990, Richard Gere, Julia Roberts. If you recall Richard Gere's character, he plays a businessman who buys companies and chops them up and sells them for parts, basically. And that's how he became fantastically wealthy. It was a harbinger to some of the things that we're seeing now, where you're basically making money by being destructive. There is a profit in destructing things, and that may not be a good thing. I'm just saying, as Americans, we build things. As Americans, we create jobs, we don't dismantle them. And I think that this is a nice way to put a spotlight on how some things work and how they may not be the best things. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to hit is Raya and the Last Dragon, and it opens in theaters and on Disney Plus with a premium sale on March 5th.
My name is Raya. Our lands have been at war for as long as we can remember. Our people never see eye to eye.
My daughter, I believe our people can come together again, but someone has to take the first step.
Now, in order to restore peace, we must find the Last Dragon.
I wish to join this fellowship of butt-kickery.
Let's go. We'll have to watch our backs.
They did a teaser of this, gosh, like 6 months ago, but it doesn't tell you a whole lot. This one gives you a little bit more about the story. And, you know, it's that sort of feudal Chinese adventure movie. And it looks actually really quite good. I mean, it looks fantastic. It has somewhat of a family-friendly style to it with characters that kids would like, but it also tells this epic international story. It also depends on how much Disney prices it. So we'll see what happens in a month or so. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Godzilla vs. Kong, which comes to theaters and HBO Max. It's been moved from March 26th to March 31st.
We need Kong. The world needs him to stop what's coming.
It's Godzilla.
These are dangerous times.
Godzilla's out there and he's hurting people and we don't know why.
There's something provoking him that we're not seeing here.
I'm of the same opinion.
I actually waited to watch this trailer because there was so much buzz about it. This movie looks good. This looks like a great follow-up to the last Godzilla movie, which actually had smackdowns between monsters. And of course, you got Kong versus Godzilla, which is a classic thing that they've done before, and this one looks like it's going to have the monster smackdown that we want. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Caged and Palmer.
Thank you.
and welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about Caged. A man is put in solitary confinement in jail after the death of his wife, for which he claims to be innocent.
The road to rehabilitation starts with acceptance. Just sign a confession.
No. I am not guilty of killing my wife. They've given me a life sentence and I'm innocent.
You believe in ghosts?
I'm afraid whatever it is you think you're seeing, that's just your mind's way of keeping you company.
I think this went straight to VOD this week. So it came out earlier this week, like on January 26th or something. And it's meant to be a serious examination of the prison system from like one person's perspective. And it plays with elements of horror and the thriller. So most of the movie is about this guy in this solitary confinement. And it shows how maddening it can be in solitary confinement, where you are literally just in a box and the sort of the mind tricks that it can play on you. It does go into cliche. A lot of things we've seen before. We've seen that the person declaring his innocence. That's like pretty much everybody in prison declares they're innocent. That's even a joke in the movie Shawshank Redemption. Everybody's innocent in here. because everybody, you know, still will maintain their innocence even if they're proved guilty. You know, even if they find them, you know, covered in blood over the dead body, they're like, oh, no, not me. But the movie shows certain things that, like I said, are cliches in these prison movies, all the way to the sadistic guard. And that's not an uncommon thing. Like either prison movies or mental institution movies, you either have a sadistic guard or an abusive nurse. I mean, Nurse Ratched from Cuckoo's Nest is a great example of that. But in this one, what's interesting with the choice they make is they put Melora Hardin as the mean, evil guard that's just abusing him all the time. And most people don't immediately remember her name, but they'll recognize her. She played in The Office. She played the woman that Michael Scott, Steve Carell's character, was having an affair with. She was also Trudy Monk in the series Monk. She was the second Trudy Monk. And she usually plays either a very nice person or a businesswoman of some sort. And sometimes she's a little cutthroat, like in The Office, but here she plays, you know, she's got a scar and she looks like she hasn't bathed in a couple days or weeks, and she's just this mean chewing tobacco kind of guard. So it is off type for her, but she's not great at it. I mean, I really think she saw this as an opportunity to do something different, which she did. And to her credit, it is a different performance than what you normally see. I don't think she completely pulls it off. I don't know if she's that versatile of an actor. So she does get a little bit corny at times with she chews the scenery. But it shows the guy having hallucinations in his cell and trying to get a pencil, a working pencil, so he can actually file his own briefs and try and go to court and prove his innocence. But it's also him going slowly mad because he's in this solitary confinement for, it starts off days, but then weeks and months on end. And they also drag out these flashbacks of him remembering what happened with him and his wife. And you're still trying to figure out, did he actually kill her or not? Or what's the real story behind that? The problem is it spends so much time dragging these things out that by the time you get to the resolution, you kind of just don't care one way or the other. So, I mean, it's meant to be a condemnation of some of the things that happened in the prison system. And you get that from at the end, you know, puts words on the screen. It's like so many convicts deal with PTSD, et cetera, et cetera. And I think to a degree it's effective, but it does fall a lot into cliche. And that holds it back from really being a good film. So I'm going to have to say that Caged kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Palmer. Justin Timberlake stars as an ex-convict who befriends a troubled boy who lives on his aunt's land.
That boy, that's Sam. His mama took off. He'll be staying with us till she's back.
You know your boy, right?
Yeah.
There's something seriously wrong with that kid.
How did you end up in prison?
Don't matter. Kids are mean, especially when they see something that they ain't used to seeing.
How many boys do you see on that show?
None.
What does that tell you?
That I can be the first.
This is available exclusively on Apple TV Plus. Some of it we've seen before. It does go down a lot of familiar territory. You know, a guy comes back from prison, just wants to keep his nose clean, just wants to get back to his life, and there are certain things that pull him back, and there are some things in his past that are either haunting him or digging at him, but he's really just trying to do the right thing. What makes this movie different is the relationship he has with his kid. And the kid, I gotta admit, the kid's great in this. The kid, who's played by this guy named Ryder Allen, and he's like, I don't know, he looks like he's about 11 years old. He's a little bit chubby, and he's awkward, and he's very almost effeminate. I mean, he watches a princess show, and he wants to wear a princess outfit for Halloween because he's into that, and that's his favorite show. And he's really much more interested in having tea parties with a girl at school than doing sports. Like, at one point, they take him to a football game, and he's more interested in the cheerleaders, not because they look cute in their outfit, but he likes the whole cheerleader perspective. He could care less about guys running into each other and playing sports. They never actually sit down and say, okay, well, here's what it is, and this kid is really going to grow up to be gay, or he's going to grow up to be trans, or anything like that. It's just saying, here's a kid who is interested in this sort of thing, and what panic that triggers in the local population, in particular this very macho, very sort of redneck population in this town where they live, and how the kid's bullied at school, and not just by kids, but by some of the adults in town, and how Palmer, he in his mind, in his framework, he's like, well, this kid's not acting as he should as a boy, but he accepts the kid because he likes the kid. And he learns to get past his own prejudices and bond with his child. And I think it's kind of good that they didn't deep dive into anything about what his future is going to be like, or his psychosexual makeup or anything like that. It's just, they're like, well, here's a kid. He's a little bit different, and that's okay. Cause we've all met people that are different. Every kid is, there's a lot of kids that are different and get bullied. And this kind of pushes that up there. When the kid's not involved, It's more or less a rote story of a guy fighting his own white trash past. And Justin Timberlake does a fine job in the movie. In fact, Justin Timberlake's one of the most talented actors out there right now. I think he's a really good actor. We know him in comedy because we see him on Saturday Night Live, but he's also a very good dramatic actor. I saw that all the way going back to Black Snake Moan when he had a small part in that. I mean, I think he is just as, if not more, talented as an actor than he is as a singer. So, you know, I think he does a good job in this. But like I said, when the kid's not in the scene, the movie kind of just turns mundane. With the kid, I think the kid's actually really good. He kind of changes things up, and it challenges people, especially people who are going to make fun of somebody because they're trans, or make fun of somebody just because of that. I mean, that's not something that's like making fun of somebody because they got blonde hair, which is, you know, sort of backwards and silly. Palmer has better elements to it than it is a holistic movie, but I'm still going to say it kind of rocks, and it's worth checking out.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Little Things and Supernova. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about The Little Things. Denzel Washington plays a small-town deputy who returns to the big city where he was a detective to help solve a string of serial killings.
Things probably changed a lot since you left.
You still got to catch him, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Not that much has changed then, right?
I can assure you all, we are taking a 24/7 all hands on deck approach to these cases.
Guy's a shark. If he stops, he dies. He likes to drive. Probably has a decent car, maybe two. High mileage.
You must really like my car.
I do. How's the trunk space?
This is the next step that Warner Brothers has in their release schedule for 2021. They did Wonder Woman on Christmas Day, which was on HBO Max and in theaters. The Little Things is also out in theaters and on HBO Max right now. So it's that first step into testing these waters. This one's essentially an award film. They're doing a heavy award push for this movie. The movie itself is generally well-directed. It's written by Johnny Lee Hancock, who has done everything from The Blind Side to The Alamo. He's done a bunch of different movies. And when I say a bunch of different movies, it's like they're not all the same. I mean, it's not like he just does Westerns. He's done stuff that's a little more lighthearted, like Saving Mr. Banks. But he's also done some heavier stuff, like The Highwaymen, and like I said, he worked on The Alamo, or something a little more serious like The Blind Side. So he's done a variety of things. This is his take on another take on a crime movie. And here's the problem with a movie like this, being just this tracking a serial killer crime story. Doing this kind of movie now, as compared to 40 years ago, there are so many movies and TV series, both in the US and the UK. If you bring in the UK, they have so many essentially murder mysteries and killer hunter series that it is almost impossible to tell the story without having the same twists and turns or snags that have been done before, sometimes many times before. So there's a real challenge in making a movie like this, just because there's so many other things out there. It's sort of like making a zombie movie and making it fresh. There's so many zombie movies out there that it's kind of been already told as many ways as possible, as opposed to making a zombie movie in the early 80s when they were relatively young, the genre itself. Now, when it comes to performances, the performances are great. I mean, you got some great actors in there. You've got Denzel Washington. He's very, very good. You got Rami Malek, who is really building up his own after, of course, doing Bohemian Rhapsody. You got Jared Leto, but Jared Leto kind of, I'm convinced that I don't think Jared Leto actually gets a script to his movies anymore. I'm convinced they just spin him around and throw him onto set and then just feed him the lines, and he acts kind of however insane he is that day. And that's how they put Jared Leto in movies now, because that seems to be what he's doing. This guy's kind of gotten really goofy. And so when you're that goofy in everything you do, your goofy performances aren't necessarily impressive. So Denzel's the one who shoulders the burden of most of this movie. Rami Malek does as well. And it has some interesting twists and turns, but the biggest problem is for a movie like this, it's the ending. And I'm not going to tell you what happens, but I can tell you the ending is completely unsatisfying. And you can have the best movie up there, but if that last 10 minutes does not work, then your movie's crap. And that's what happens with this movie. I'm like, okay, it's a little bit slow, but I'm interested. And I'm like, whoa, what happened here? You completely betray characters, and you betray some of the things you were leading up to, and you kind of cop out on other things. And I'm like, okay, maybe there might be some realism in this, but I don't want to see the ending of the movie. I thought was terrible. I mean, really terrible. My son and I watched the movie. He was interested in seeing it, and so we watched it together. And we both at the end look at each other and been like, that was it? That was the ending? That's not good. So, yeah, it gets the end and completely deflates. And that's a problem. So that's what went from being a decent movie to suddenly getting a rating that it sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Supernova. Stanley Tucci and Colin Firth star as a married couple on a road trip, reconciling the fact that one of them is suffering from the early stages of dementia.
So can you tell that it's gotten worse?
I'd like to make a speech. Maybe Sam will do it for me.
Yeah, I'd love to.
That you do it for me.
Now, as most of you will know, I'm slowly losing my ability to remember. And I definitely wouldn't be here if it weren't for this man next to me.
I want to be remembered for who I was, but not for who I'm about to become.
This is essentially an acting spotlight on both Firth and Tucci. Tucci's the character. He plays the guy who was a writer. They're both kind of intellectuals, and they've been together for decades. Tucci was a writer who was, I think he used to teach. Colin Firth plays a concert pianist. And the reason for this trip they're taking in this sort of little camper that they've got in the English countryside is they're going to a performance for Colin Firth. He's going to perform. Tucci's character is the one that's suffering from dementia. And you see it slowly creeping into their lives, and you suddenly realize, oh yes, this is something that's a problem. Now, look, I would watch the two of these guys as actors just deciding what they're going to eat at McDonald's. They are that good of actors, and they are so well-versed in bringing a realism to their performances that I could watch them do anything. But you add something that has layers to it, and in particular, the struggle that any couple who've been together for so long, when one of them has a medical issue, especially something that's going to cause you to lose your faculties mentally, it shows some real struggles here. And it's just a joy to watch the two of them act. And that's the thing. And I know I sound really like your classic critic at this point, but it really is. They're both great actors. And it's just wonderful watching them interact with each other and play off each other and really get to the emotional core of what happens when you are staring down the barrel at the end of life. Especially if you're staring down the barrel at the end of life, knowing your mind's going to be disappearing as you're going. And maybe part of this is I've had some experience with cognitive issues in the past. My grandfather had Alzheimer's, and I watched him lose his mind over years. I was young when it happened, but I remember it very clearly, and I saw the impact it had on the people he loved and who loved him. It's tough to watch somebody who was at one time completely in control suddenly not. That's the real core of this movie. What's interesting, it reminds me, there's two movies it reminds me of. There's one called The Leisure Seeker, which stars Helen Mirren and Donald Sutherland, and they're an old couple who go on a road trip in their RV, but one of them is sick at the end of life with cancer treatments, and it's them kind of having one last hurrah. So it reminds me of that because it's a story of these two people very much in love at the end of their lives, going off and doing some things together. It also reminds me of this movie called Love is Strange, which starred Alfred Molina and John Lithgow, and that was about a married gay couple who had to break up because one of them was going to lose their job because they like worked for like a Catholic school that was going to fire him because he was married to another man. Now that one was clearly about the homosexual experience. Supernova's not. They just happen to be homosexual. It's not the gay experience. It's the experience of what it's like to be watching the person you love fade away. It just happens to be two men that are in that main character. And that's where I think you see some real progression in the representation of gay men. It's not about their sexuality. It's about their love and it's about their relationship. And that's what makes it so good because, like I said, you have just two fantastic actors playing off each other and they do such a great job. So I was surprised at how much I enjoyed this movie and how much, and it got me just because these two guys are so good. So I'm going to have to say that Supernova totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to talk about the release dates and their shuffling a little bit and the Home Cinema Roundup with a spotlight on Snowpiercer Season 1 and Doom Patrol Season 2. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quickly before we jump into the Home Cinema Roundup. I want to hit a couple release dates. I know I could have done this in the news section, but I wanted to hit just really quickly what some of the release dates that have changed since last week. You know, we talked about Peter Rabbit and Nobody and Cinderella and Ghostbusters and No Time to Die. And then you had the release of The Kingsman got moved from March all the way to August. You have A Quiet Place 2, which is moved from April 23rd, which was almost a year to the day of when it was supposed to come out. It's moved now into September. The Bob's Burgers movie has been taken completely off the schedule. Morbius was moved to next January. Escape Room is moved to next January. And then there was going to be an Elvis Presley movie that Warner Brothers was going to drop in November, and it got moved till next year. So we're still seeing some dates getting vacated in the spring and early summer. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. There are two Blu-ray sets that I want to talk about. The first one is Snowpiercer Season 1. It's on TNT, but it's been released. And I believe you can still watch it on HBO Max as well, because TNT is a subsidiary of Warner Brothers or Warner Media. But the Blu-ray for the first season is out. And in this TV series, after a climate cataclysm, what remains of humanity lives on a high-speed train separated by classes and castes in the cars.
Attention all passengers. Wilford Industries wishes you good morning.
The temperature outside is minus 119.6 degrees Celsius.
People up train. Shoved us down here to fend for ourselves. Never forget who you are.
A tailie.
Our fortunes built this train, and Mr. Wilford is losing control.
They keep pushing, and it's time we push back.
This is also based on the original movie that came out. I think it was 2013. I think it came out in Korea in 2013, made it to the States in 2014. And that was directed by Bong Joon-ho, who did Parasite, and he, of course, won a bunch of Oscars and other awards for Parasite last year. This is, of course, another Korean movie, but it had that American crossover, because it had Chris Evans in it, had Tilda Swinton, John Hurt, a bunch of Americans, or at least Hollywood stars in the movie, and it was in mostly English. So that movie, Snowpiercer, is a little bit different than what you had in something like Parasite, which was a wholly Korean movie. This has been given a full series, so you have a little bit more time to play around with it. And they changed some things in it. But the general gist of it is, you know, there's this climate catastrophe, and everybody piles onto this train, and this train supposedly has some engine that'll basically perpetually run. And they're on this track, and they just basically circle the Earth, because if they were to stop, they would die and freeze, because the entire world is frozen over. First, I'm going to just say that somebody who has a little bit of background in science, that's all hogwash. And that was a little bit hard to get past in the movie. I could accept it in the movie. The problem is that this series, by stretching it into like something like 9 or 10 episodes, you're stretching the premise of this perpetual motion machine. And as I'm watching it, every time something happens and you see the train outside, you're like, well, what if the bridge breaks? I mean, what if one of the girders breaks? They have no fix for that. And they've been running around the Earth for like 7 or 8 years. And then you're like, well, at some point the wheels are going to wear out. And at some point the joints and the engines, or something's going to go bad. I mean, you can get a car, but you can drive a car for only so long. But you know, how many of us are driving a car that's more than 20, 25 years old? Most of us aren't, because cars wear out. And that's one of the biggest problems I always had going against Snowpiercer. The other thing is, and this is, it's all about the premise to me, why I have problems with Snowpiercer. I've been on cruises. I know what it was like to have the resources on a ship. And of course, I was never like on the tail end where I was, you know, eating my own feces like they do in these movies. But you'd go for a week and they would still have to be restocking constantly. And then I'm like, I find it impossible to believe. I don't care if it's got 1,000 cars in it. How the heck do they have that much resources to do all the stuff? They have like a cattle car. And I'm like, well, that's great. But, you know, even if all you're doing is serving people in first class, how the heck do you manage that? That is way harder to allocate those resources. But ultimately, when the original Korean movie, when it was made, was meant to be almost an allegory for the caste system in society and in very much in Korea, but it can be applied here, you know, with the poor and the first class versus, you know, middle class and everything, and the warring classes and how hard it is to ascend, and you really can't move freely back and forth. It worked in a movie, but the premise, it spread so far in the series that, you know, sort of like the allegory just wears thin after a while. And the structure that they set up, I don't think would work. Now, it's got some interesting things in there, and if you really want to deep dive into politics and social issues, issues and the class struggles and structure of any society, they're in there. But I mean, it's like this movie, and I described it to my son. He was asking me about it, and I said, it's almost good. this series, it's almost good. It really has a potential to be great, but it kind of gets too interested in some boring characters. And its premise, it's not a House of Cards, but it's maybe a House of Cards with a really good shellac job on it, but it still will collapse at some point. So, I mean, I think it's an interesting series, and it's interesting to watch. And it certainly gets better as it goes on. The first 5-6 episodes, they're a little slow. And by the time you get to the end of the season, it's pretty decent. But I'm going to say it kind of rocks. I'm curious to see what they do in season two.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the other release this week I want to hit, and that is Doom Patrol Season 2. This ragtag group of DC superheroes struggle to find their way while facing off against bizarre foes as well as themselves.
If you want to understand what I've done, I needed to find a way to outlive my daughter. So I began my experiments in search of mortality. I'd make some adjustments to people.
What's up with his daughter?
Dorothy's missing. She will unleash hell on Earth.
I told you to be polite.
And you will be powerless to stop it.
Help me find her.
I don't know how you handle things like this.
Well, typically we just kind of wing it.
Now, I say DC superheroes, but they're really not all superheroes. I mean, they got some of them in there, like Cyborg. He was the character from Justice League. It's the same character, different actor. They're people with extraordinary abilities that haven't quite figured out how to become superheroes yet. I never read the Doom Patrol series, but I was aware of it. It was the misfit version of the Teen Titans. And in that sense, it does some stuff that's really out of the box. It is out there. They have some characters in this show that are bizarre and crazy and really do imbue the feel of the comics from, like, you know, the 70s through the 90s. And even though I've not read those comics, I read comics in the, especially DC comics through the 70s through the 90s. And I think it really does draw from a lot of the elements to it. So I think it's like most of the DC stuff that's put on television rather than the movies tends to be authentic to the original source material. The problem is it sometimes loses its focus, and at times it's trying to figure out what is it trying to do. There's a couple episodes. I mean, there's, I think, only about 8 or 9 episodes. Some of them are really goofy. I mean, to the point that they're so off the beaten path, they don't even make internal structural sense. But I will say this is a nice bridge between your standard DC television series like Supergirl or Batwoman, which is aired on CW, and, you know, something that's like a theatrical version of it with bigger special effects. I mean, this is R-rated. It has adult language in it, and it has violence in it. It's because it's on HBO or HBO Max. So it's kind of existing in both worlds. It looks better than your standard TV series, and it doesn't have that, you know, Riverdale pop element to it. But it does have some cohesion issues. But I did enjoy the characters. I do get annoyed with some of them. And I would like to have had a little more focus in each episode of actually telling the specific story. But it kind of goes all over the place. It's got some great ideas. And it goes some really interesting places. It's sometimes stumbles around a little bit getting there. But still, it's worth watching. I'm going to give it a kind of rocks. It's worth checking out, especially if you got an HBO Max account or you want to spring for the Blu-ray. I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Also available this week on DVD and Blu-ray include Fat Man, Synchronic, Southland Tales. Again, everyone keeps trying to get me to watch that movie again. But this one is the cans cut and the theatrical cut. And that's it. I need to go. And next week I'll be talking about The Reckoning, Rams, and Falling. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.